And we're about to learn the fourth and fifth Mishnayos. So the principles remain the same as they were yesterday, namely that when a non-Jew is left in custody of a Yayin, there has to be mirsas. There has to be a level of intimidation that's associated with it so that there's no direct handling of the Yayin. So one of the things that's generally sufficient is what we call Yotze V'Nechnas, coming in, coming out, coming in, coming out. Because since it's an unpredictable schedule, there's a sense of trepidation that maybe they'll get caught doing something. So again, I pointed this out in the past, but the single best way to accomplish this might even be, you know, with technology, with cameras, right? So the idea that they're being watched at all times, is that a kind of a mashgiach tmidi? Of course, you know, no technology is perfect, but maybe there's something to that as well. So in any event, let's say somebody went to go take a shortcut and they left the wine on a wagon or on the boat. Nichnas l'medina v'rachatz, he goes into the city and takes a shower. So mutter, under those circumstances, you come back to the wine and it's permissible. We don't think that anything happened. However, if he said to the non-Jew that he'll be away for a while, so now we get into the nitty-gritty. Modio shu maflig k'day sheyishtom v'yistom v'yigov. So again, according to the Chachamim, the amount of time that it would take the non-Jew to drill a hole in the top of the barrel and then to close it back up. Rabbi Shimon Gamliel, who again we saw yesterday's normative view, Omer, Kadei Sheyiftach V'Yigov V'Tigov. It has to be enough time, a little bit more time, to form or to fashion a new top of the barrel. Haminiach Nachri B'Chanus, let's say again you're a store owner and you decide that you're going to head out and leave a Gentile in charge. As long as you're coming in and out, you're not gone in any significant way, it's permissible. But if you say to the employee, I'll be back, I'm going out for a while. So again, the same time principles apply. So one of the questions that all the Rishonim deal with based on the Gemara is like, why do we need these cases? What does it matter if it's in a store versus, a wagon or a boat? And the answer is because you could imagine, you know, different kinds of scenarios. For example, the store might be the worst of all worlds. Now you say the store, but the employer, the store owner, can always come back and check out what's going on. That's true, but a store can pretty easily be closed. So like, let's say the non-Jewish worker is able to lock the door or whatever it is, so then he feels much more comfortable as opposed to on the open seas or a wagon where a person might not have that level of comfort. On the other hand, you know, you're on a boat and the person, let's say, leaves the boat and, you know, goes off, into the land, so then a person like the non-Jew who's left on the boat thinks like they're, you know, pretty much unsupervised. So there's different ways of thinking about it. And again, in a pre-technology era, that sense is, of freedom is definitely far more pervasive than it could ever be today. So the fifth Mishnah says, that would be an area where a countertop or not on the table. So there's a basic assumption which is made, which is that the non-Jew might feel comfortable handling anything which is on the table, but he's not going to reach over to the counter. That would be a bridge too far. However, but if you give the guy a little bit of a more proprietary sense, like you're in control, and says, oh, you can start pouring things around over here, so then that gives the non-Jew the thought that, okay, I can do whatever I want around here. I can take things off the counter, etc. So if you say to him that, and as we saw before, open barrels are going to be problematic because there's really nothing getting in the way, nothing possibly stopping the non-Jew from tampering with them. But if they're sealed up, so then a certain amount of time is going to be relevant for, you know, these purposes and having the non-Jew. If he doesn't have enough time to, you know, mishandle things and then to refashion the barrel, we don't have to be worried about that altogether. So again, the important point here is a sense of mirsas, is a sense of, trepidation. So I just wanted to tie this into a discussion that happens in, you know, every kashrus vad, including, the RCBC, really everywhere, So we have a policy, which has been maintained over the years, of that stores that are open on Shabbos, not talking about Jewish ownership, that's a different issue altogether, but stores that are open on Shabbos under non-Jewish ownership, even if everything is stored as kosher, we don't certify it. Now, what's that about? Obviously, a non-Jew isn't obligated to keep Shabbos, and allowed to keep Shabbos. So the answer is very simple. The answer has to do with supervision. Because any day that a store is open, you have to be willing to show up on that day, right? You know, chachma bagayim tamein. Sometimes, you know, there's a very inappropriate attitude out there that, Jews are the only ones who know what's going on in the world. It would take about 2 weeks for the Gentile to figure out that, oh, the rabbi never comes by to check on Saturday. Small wonder, right? He's in the synagogue or whatever it is. So unless you're really able to maintain a presence, and again, the kind of presence which is unpredictable, it becomes a real liability in terms of kashrus. Now, people are thinking, like, what's the worst thing that can happen? So the way that it really works in the real world is that, you know, like you're running a store. So what stores really don't like, if you're in the food service industry, what stores really don't like is to tell customers, oh, we're out of that. That's generally speaking not a good thing because that's how they lose customers. So what happens is let's say you're running an ice cream store. And so everything in there should be kosher in principle. But you run out of this kind of topping or you run out of that kind of topping. So what does the manager do? He's not the owner, he's just a manager, probably 19 years old. So he tells the 16-year-old employee, you know, run to CVS and go get, you know, some chocolate chips. Run to CVS and go get some chocolate syrup. That's how these things go. Because they don't want to get caught. Somebody's going to come into the ice cream store and say, what do you mean you don't have chocolate syrup? What kind of ice cream store is this? You're not an ice cream store. You know, this is a disgrace. This is an outrage. You know, people get pretty worked up. So that's how it happens. And there could be worse or less egregious violations, but that's how, you know, things go on, unless people have a sense that, like, you know, people are going to come, people are going to actually come by to check. So there's actually only one exception to that in the local scene, which is Hot Bagels on Teaneck Road, right down here. And the reason for that is that when this community was in its infancy and there were no kosher establishments to speak of in general, so Hot Bagels did a big tova with the kosher community, is that they carried kosher bagels. Again, none of the kalim are kosher, but at least you could buy bagels there. And as a hakara sato for that, we've always said that's the one place that will certify. And yes, if you walk into that store, and I like to get coffee there. I think the coffee's pretty good. If you walk into that store, it'll say, actually, there's a big sign that says, you know, only uncut bagels under supervision, because that's the way it always was. So, you know, hopefully for, you know, the Ol Me'ad, you know, even after we relocate to Yerushalayim, you know, Teaneck Hot Bagels will be, will continue to support them because of all they did to ensure that the we Jews of Teaneck could have our bagels way back when. Yes, Steve, go ahead.
Yeah,